The first thing this morning is a presentation from the Northeast Fisheries Science Center. We'll receive some summaries of the Transboundary Resource Assessment Committee meeting results. We're going to hear about herring and the three groundfish stocks addressed through U.S.-Canada resource sharing agreement. Are there any questions? Okay. We'll turn it over to Gary first for herring.
Okay. Good morning. My name is Gary Shepherd, a biologist with the Northeast Fishery Science Center and the Population Dynamics Branch. And this morning I'll just give you an update of the Transboundary Resource Assessment Committee, the TRAC, assessment that was conducted in June in St. Andrews. And so for the Gulf of Maine, George's Bank herring stock, this was intended to be an update of the previous benchmark assessment. So I'd just like to run through the results for you and give you some highlights of what the implications of those. Okay. Just to give you some idea of the information that we're dealing with, the time series of the assessment was from 1967 through 2008, and we had landings that were generated back in 1960. So the assessment started at the point where the information was available for the indices, et cetera, but the U.S. and Canadian landings, the U.S. Landings in this chart here includes the foreign catches in the 1960s and 1970s. But clearly the landings have been dominated by the U.S. fisheries and remain so. This is in terms of metric tons and in terms of number, again, as our assessment began in 1967, the initial period was result of the foreign fleet as well as the U.S. and Canadian catches. So the overall, the landings have been relatively stable for the last couple of decades, actually. The Canadian fishery is primarily, in recent years anyway, has been a ware fishery in New Brunswick, and the U.S. fishery is the purse seine midwater trawl primarily. The assessment was based on the initial an update of the stock assessment that was previously done in 2005, and which included indices from NIMS surveys. There are no Canadian survey information available for this assessment that we used. So the primary indices from the previous assessment were the winter survey from the NIMS. And you can, as you can see in the winter indices combined index here, it's relatively flat over the short time series. It was ended in 2007, so that's no longer being conducted. The spring survey for NIMS was used, and as you can see, there's a somewhat of a downward trend in abundance and in weight per toe. In the most recent years, but it's last couple of years been relatively flat. We have the NIMS fall survey, which is the longest in the time series, and again it is somewhat similar to the spring in the sense that although it's highly variable, somewhat of a downward trend in recent years in weight per toe and number per toe. And then we also, in recent years, had conducted an acoustic survey. This acoustic survey was designed in a specified area on Georgia Bank in the Gulf of Maine, and there was a obvious change in the trend from the initial 3 years. Then there was a significant decrease. In evaluating these indices, it was determined that there was a mismatch in the acoustic survey, particularly in the design relative to the distribution of herring at the time of the survey. There was evidence that there was the intent of the acoustic survey was to index the spawning aggregation of herring, and there was evidence that there was, in the latter years, that there was spawning herring outside of the survey area. So therefore, it was considered to be a biased index that we're missing herring that should have been that were in the index in the beginning of the time series when it was overlapping closer to the spawning period. So the decision was made to that this was not probably an appropriate index for herring. There was bias, and so therefore it was not included in the in this year's assessment. In addition, the first index we looked at, the winter one, it was concluded at the track that that one probably was also not appropriate. During the time series of the winter indices, the winter survey, there was changes in how much coverage was conducted on the Georges Bank. So it was felt at the track that there was a variation over the time series of the coverage of the survey, and therefore it was not appropriately indexing the herring. Also, the track felt that there was not a correspondence between the spring and the fall indices, the direction that it was showing in the winter index. So that index was dropped from the assessment. So consequently, we ended up with using the spring and the fall surveys. Those surveys, the time series were split in 84-85 to accommodate some variation in gear changes in the survey. The model that was used was a catch at age model. It's a forward projecting forward catch at age model as opposed to the backward estimating VPAs. The model uses ages 2 to 6 plus, although the herring can lifespan be out to 12 because of aging issues. It was cut off at age 6 plus. The selectivity to the fishery was fixed at it fully selected for all those ages 2 to 6. Natural mortality was fixed at 0.2, and the biomass was calculated as the number at age times the weight in the spawning biomass calculated for a fall spawning period. So the results of the assessment was such that the fishing mortality has declined sharply from the period in the 1960s and 70s when it was around 0.6, 0.7, as high as 0.8. In the last 15 years or so, it is to drop below the find a little pointy thing here. Drop below. The FMSY, which was also FMSY and BMSY were recalculated based on the results of the assessment. So the new FMSY is 0.27, which is a decrease from the previous assessment. So the terminal year F in 2008 was 0.14, and it's been below FMSY for 15 years plus. The distribution of the values of F coming out of the model such that it gives you some indication how well the F is estimated was fairly well estimated. Ranges from about 0.12 to 0.16 for the likely possible solution. So F would seem to be well estimated. The biomass was follow the pattern where it had the decline in biomass in the period when the stock had collapsed. It rebounded in the 80s, early 90s, and has been at or above the BMSY level here since my eyes are that good, early 90s anyway. The BMSY value, the new estimate was 670,600 metric tons. The terminal year estimate for biomass was 651,749. So technically it was slightly below the BMSY level. However, if you look at the distribution of biomass coming out of the model, the red line here is the BMSY, and the terminal year estimate is just below it. So it's basically at BMSY, just slightly below. Similarly for spawning biomass, that it's been at a relatively flat, stable value for level for 15, 20 years. At least the point estimate is reasonably well estimated. And the 2-plus abundance, there's been somewhat of a decrease in abundance, but most notably in recruitment, the model estimates that the 2008 recruitment is at the lowest point in the time series. However, there was a 2005 year class that shows up quite strong. 2007 actually was fairly good. This 2005 particularly shows up in the Canadian ware fishery, I believe in 2000, which is primarily age 1 and 2 fish in that fishery. And so that 2005 year class shows up strong and actually increased their catch to about 23,000 tons as a result of that year class going through the fishery. The average, long-term, 10-year average of that fishery is about 16,000, ranges from like 3 to 23. So it was at the time series high in the Canadian fishery because of that year class. One of the biggest problem issue that came out of the assessment, however, was the presence of sometimes a retrospective pattern. What the retrospective pattern implies is that as you add information to the time series, that your estimates change either randomly or in a consistent pattern. And in this case, there was a consistent change in the estimate of fishing mortality, where as the information was added to the model, that the estimate of fishing mortality increased. And the opposite for abundance and biomass, such that for the estimate of abundance, as we added information to the assessment, that it systematically decreased the estimate of 2-plus abundance. And in particular, it was noticeable in the biomass, in this case here, the graph shows the spawning biomass, such that as the information adds onto the assessment, that the estimate of biomass systematically decreases. So consequently, the estimate in the previous assessment, which is like 3 years back, showed that biomass was near all-time high. As we've added information, the estimate progressively decreases, such that now even though the biomass is still at or about BMSY, it's much lower than it was in the previous assessment. So in short, the assessment results suggest that the fishing mortality in 2008 was about 0.14, which is below FMSY, which is re-estimated at 0.27. The biomass in 2008 was 652,000 tons, which is slightly below the BMSY level of 671,000 tons. SSB, spawning biomass in 2008 of 516,000 tons. The 2000 catch, it decreased slightly. It was 90,000 tons for U.S. and Canadian fisheries combined. The 2004 and 2006 recruitment, age 2, which when I suggested before was 2008, it's actually 2006. That was below average. However, the 2005 recruitment seemed to be above average. So the conclusion was that overfishing is not occurring, and the biomass is not overfished, was the conclusion of the track. And I think that's basically a summary of what was conducted. I'd be happy to answer any questions. I'll try to.
Thank Council, you. Questions for Gary? Doug Raup.
Thank you, Gary. I had a couple questions. One, on your last slide, you said the 2005 year class was above average, but on your graph, you also showed a 2007 year class that yes. also looked above average.
It's a bit misleading. The recruits are active because it's a 2 to 6 plus model, so the recruits showing up are actually age 2 fish. So that 2007 is actually age 2 fish, which is the 2005 year class.
Okay.
So it so shows up in It shows
so
up
what you're saying is it's 2005 and 2003 are good year classes. No?
2005 anyway, in 2003, yeah.
Yeah. And those would be in 2008, the 2003s would be age 5s?
Let me see if I can find that slide for you here. There we go. These are age two fish, so that 2007 value is the 2005 year class, and that would be 2004, 2003, 2002 year class.
Okay.
So those are, when I say good, they're above average. I mean, they're not as large as the previous big ones we've seen.
Right.
Yes.
They're above average.
They're above average.
So the question I've had, and I pose this to Matt, and I probably get the same answer from you. We've been fishing below FMSY, well below, even if you take into consideration the retrospective pattern. If you add 50% to the point value of 0.14, you're still below the 0.27. So if we've been fishing below our well below FMSY, why are we downturning now in our abundance levels?
Well, we're actually not so much downturning in abundance. I mean, our recruitment, you know, is fluctuating as it always has. The magnitude of that seems to be somewhat of a decline in the magnitude of the big year classes. But in terms of overall abundance, I mean, it's really a function of the strength of the incoming year classes. And overall biomass has been stable for 15 years. But it really, the abundance fluctuates as a function of how big those year classes are. So that big, the spike here you had in the, you know, 90s when you had a really, really big year class, you know, gives a perception of a downward trend because you haven't had a really big one like that since. So it's, if that answers your question. But it's really a function of recruitment.
So even though we've had a couple of examples that are currently in the fishery that have above average recruitment and then some that are about average and one that's way below, although I think that 2008 isn't even in the,
that'll probably
isn't
change.
In the picture right now.
Yeah.
And we're fishing well below our FMSY, we still could end up with a downward recruitment, downward biomass trend.
Right.
Mary Beth?
Well, a couple things. One thing is that I didn't think we were necessarily with a downward biomass trend. There was a slight decrease, but I didn't think it was overall, in the scheme of things, significant.
Right. The biomass has been pretty stable. There's a slight decrease as that year class moved through. But as you can see here, it's you know, at least in the last 10 years or so, it's been pretty flat.
Right. So that is what I thought. I mean, it seemed that having attended the track assessment that it was more an issue of the scale. I mean, the trends were, and all the different runs that were done were similar in pattern, but it was the scale that became an issue. And certainly there was a lot of discussion about the utility of the model in general, and I wonder if you could characterize that for people a little bit. I'm sure you could do better than I could.
Well, In the course of the assessment, we evaluated several different model configurations. I think we looked at 10 different configurations in terms of including or excluding indices, which ages and so forth. And you're correct in that the overall trend tended to be the same for all of them. It was a scale issue, depending which, to some extent. I mean, there was, depending which indices are in there, which are not, it can change the scale of the terminal period here, whether it was close to the initial 67 value biomass or not. So, you know, the track decided based on looking at the indices, which indices would be included. Because it was an update, there was a reluctance to try and add different ages into it, really change the model configuration too much from what the previous one was, else getting into a whole new model. So it was... The decision was made on which indices really affected the scale, and by using only the spring and the initially by using the acoustic, having the acoustic indices in, by taking that out, raised the terminal year biomass quite a bit. By taking the winter out, it basically contradicted the acoustic signal. It brought it back to pretty much the same place we started with. So it was it changed depending on which model we use, but the pattern was the same, right?
And there was some discussion about the fact that the update was constrained by the model, and that if it were a benchmark assessment, that there would have been consideration of different models because of the significant retrospective pattern that this model produced, among a number of, you know, other things that were problematic about this. And I'm wondering, I'm not sure, somewhere along the line we were scheduled for a benchmark assessment and ended up with the update. And several of the scientists at the table said that if we were in a benchmark, that they would throw this model out, that it quite frankly didn't function well. And I wonder if you could just speak to that.
Well, as far as the schedule, I wasn't aware that there was a benchmark scheduled. The last one that was done was a benchmark. I'd have to confer with Paul or Richard probably would tell you that. As far as what would have changed had it been a benchmark, we would have explored other model as in the last benchmark it was done. I can't say for sure this would have been thrown out or not, because in the previous assessment they looked at a VPA, they looked at a different model, and there was disagreement on which one was appropriate because they were very different. And the model that's in use now, the ASAP model, was chosen because they had the flexibility to perform either way depending on how it was configured. No doubt we'd explore other modeling possibilities, particularly to get rid of the retrospective pattern, which is a very difficult thing, again. But I can't speculate whether it would have got thrown out or not. It depends on really about the tolerance to the retrospective pattern, if people thought it was adequate, even though it wasn't wonderful. But certainly there would have been other models explored. So.
Dr. Pierce.
Okay, thanks, Gary. I need to clarify a few things just to make sure I understand where exactly we are with the implications of the retrospective pattern, efficient mortality, and biomass. I look at the figures that you provided in your presentation, the ones that are the second and third from the end of your presentation. And as you noted, looking at the retrospective pattern, the bottom curve in the series of curves that overlap each other, well, they're on top of each other, we see that fishing mortality has been low, lower than MSY for at least 14 years, maybe longer than that, but you know, very low mortality. So overfishing has not been occurring for a long time. I see that the stock biomass has been, since 1994 or so, looking at the lower curve, most recent assessment, that biomass has been stable at a high level for about 14 years, not overfished, near the target, above the target, below the target, a little up and down, vacillating about the target. In that situation, that those low fishing mortality rates and that high stock size have been that way for 14 years, with an overall catch, looking at U.S. now, an overall catch from the Gulf of Maine, Georgia's Bank, and elsewhere of about where we are right now. So suggest to me, and this is my question, well, my question is, with that information you provided regarding F and stock size over that 14-year period, not overfished, overfishing not occurring, is it possible that current catches that we now have by geographic area, Gulf of Maine, Georgia's Bank, Southern New England area, that they are indeed sustainable without there being any impact on spawning stock biomass and fishing mortality rate? That is, we'll still be at a high biomass spawning stock size, and we'll still have a very low fishing mortality rate below the FMSY?
perception is yes. However, the concern is that if you follow the retrospective pattern through, that each year your biomass estimate decreases a whatever factor it is in the same direction. That if you were to continue your assessment out another 4 or 5 years, that your biomass estimate, you'd expect it probably to continue in that same direction, that your estimate would decline in the terminal years, which would give you a very different picture on what your biomass would be. Given the fact that your retrospective pattern on fishing mortality is relatively minor by comparison, the implication would be that you're moving towards a higher fishing mortality as you go progress forward and a lower spawning biomass. So the picture in the terminal year would be, yes, it would imply that for the last 15 years we have fished below FMSY, and we have, and the biomass has been relatively stable at or above BMSY. The concern is that accurate or not? And with the retrospective pattern, there's some concern that, given the uncertainty in those estimates, that you can't say for sure that that would continue, or that was actually, in fact, previously what we've experienced.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Gary. Retrospective patterns are very difficult to interpret. In this particular case, when I look at the patterns relative to biomass and fishing mortality rate, I see a pattern that isn't as troubling as patterns with some other stocks. By that I mean, when I look at the shape of the curves, especially the most recent trends in biomass and fishing mortality from 1 year going back in time, I see that the lines are flattening out and that the distance from one curve to the next is narrowing. So it suggests to me that if we were to do the assessment next year, we'll find ourselves with a retrospective pattern, that is the new line, that's very close to the situation we have right now, the most recent assessment.
Mm-hmm.
As long as the lines are flat, leveling off, which they appear to have done, they appear to have leveled off, and as long as the gap between the lines continues to be narrow, it suggests to me that any correction for retrospective patterns should be minor as opposed to major. And I say that because as we get into SSC advice and the implications of this assessment, the question is, to what extent do we have to account for a retrospective pattern? And the pattern I see before me now indicates there should probably be a very minor correction for the possibility of a continued retrospective pattern. So I guess my question is, do you agree with my perception or not?
Well, you say there's a couple of questions embedded in there. So as far as the significance of the retrospective, certainly in comparison to other stocks, it's less troubling only because you're coming down to BMSY or coming up to FMSY. It's not a situation where you think that everything is fine, all of a sudden you're at half BMSY and you're, you know, in deep trouble. So the directionality as far as where it starts to where it's going is much more of a positive, if you will, than a lot of stocks. However, the question in retrospective pattern evaluation is where do you don't know what's going to happen next year. I mean, it could flip around the other direction. You could be overestimating instead of underestimating F, for instance. If you go back 1 year, you'll get one interpretation. If you go back just on the abundance estimate there, if you go back 2 or 3 years, you're going to get a different consideration. So some of the analysis that have been done, which is why we use the 7-year period, it's an unknown. You don't know whether going forward whether it's going to get better or worse. Hopefully, if you do another assessment and benchmark, it'll get much better because you can try things to try and get rid of it. But in the short term, it creates a tremendous amount of uncertainty, and that's the nature of it. You don't know how much or which direction even.
So I can't exactly agree with you, no.
Mark Gibson.
Mark. Thank you.
How you doing, Mark?
Could you go back one slide? No, okay. It's the other retrospective pattern. I guess it's SSB.
That one. Okay.
I guess maybe I take a little bit different view than Dave Pierce, but this retrospective pattern is very persistent, and it reverberates back away a long time. You have to go way back into the time series before estimates of biomass are relatively unaffected from the start point. In fact, if I didn't see any label on the graph, it would almost look to me like somebody was using simulated data and playing around with assessment assumptions and how they violate the simulated data. It's so consistent. It makes me worry about model structure problems. And I guess that gets to my question about the selectivity pattern that's imposed. And you have 40 years of catch-at-age data, and you've imposed a unit selectivity pattern on this. There's no ability for the solution to deviate or to estimate the catches at age with anything but constant selectivity of all ages. It seems to me that's a pretty rigid assumption and doesn't leave much flexibility and could be generating this long-term consistent pattern. I'm wondering how the group came to that conclusion. Is a limitation in the model, or was there testing done for alternate selectivity patterns, or where did that come from?
Well, in the previous assessment, they had evaluated selectivity and so forth and concluded that it was pretty much fully recruited at age 2 in flat top. Updated it, we stayed with that same assumption. However, in the process of evaluating other models, in this, there was one model we looked at where we included age 1s from the Ware fishery and indices. And in that model, I allowed the model to fit selectivity, just to answer that question you just asked. And even when we allowed it to fit selectivity, it still comes out at 1.0 at age 2 and partially selected at age 1, which is not included in this. So selectivity seems to be fairly rigid as far as being, you know, at age 2 being fully recruited. In another assessment model, that would be something to look at to see what happens. But the cause of the retrospective is probably multiple causes going on here that can lead to that, and so I think next time around, I think all those things are going to have to be explored. But selectivity would be one of them, probably.
Dave Gaethel.
Well, I had several questions. When you talked about the retrospective pattern, you said as you added more information, the retrospective pattern got wider. And so which one of those lines, or do any of them, correspond to using the information that was available prior to when the retrospective pattern seems to get quite large? In other words, if you use the information that was available, say, prior to 1985 and ran the model, same information today, do you get one of those curves? Do you fall anywhere in that range of curves?
Well, it's a tough one to answer, only because what I implied was that as you add information, that your solution gets changes in a direction. The magnitude of that change, obviously, is different depending on which year you have. And the analysis that's shown here, what we did is went back 7 years and calculated what the retrospective was. Given the nature of this type of model, if you kept going back 20 years, you're likely to get stopped at 85, you very well may have a retrospective in 85 as well. It's just a little bit deceiving here because it only goes back 7 years. But if you go back too far, the model doesn't work because you don't have enough information in it. And that's pretty much what happens in this case. If you go back too far, it just doesn't. You've run out of information in the time series and the direction. So I really can't answer that question, to be honest with you.
Okay. The reason I ask is it seems like when we've gotten these newer surveys, the acoustic survey, the different surveys, we seem to be getting widely different solutions now, where we used to just get a narrower range of solutions before. And because of that, you've dropped certain things from the model based on a discussion of the assembled people there. And you've tried different runs of the model, you know, with the acoustic survey, without it, with the winter survey, without it, things like that. And these are all giving widely different solutions, which, well, it makes me uncomfortable that there is not, none of these is the right solution, basically. That's what makes me uncomfortable. And in essence, that retrospective pattern is a measure of uncertainty, which says that our uncertainty of telling you what's out there is increasing with time, when it seems as though logically it should be decreasing as we get more information. So that's the first point. The second one is on natural mortality. Point two doesn't seem to fit the lifespan of this fish. And I wondered if model runs were done with, say, 0.3 or 0.25 or 0.4, something that would perhaps fit the lifespan of the fish better. And if those were done, what kind of information did we get?
Actually, 0.2 does fit. The lifespan is about 15 on herring. We just truncated it 6-plus because of, currently what the age distribution and the aging error issues and so forth. But a base AMA 0.2 isn't too far from what you would expect given the lifespan of the fish. However, we did look at some different M's to see what the implication was, only in the sense of looking to see if it got rid of the retrospective pattern. And, in fact, it did not. The only way using M that you could get rid of the retrospective pattern is if you really crank up the M on the 6-plus category, which basically sucks out the old fish before they can create a retrospective pattern. Kind of creates an artificial removal of the retrospective pattern. But what I did look at was some of the work Bill Overholtz and Jason Link did looking at M's over the time and used those values in the model, a variable M, to look at. And they ended in 2003, so I just carried that out. And the values that were, you'd expect given the pattern wasn't a whole lot different than 0.2 in recent years. And it didn't make a whole lot of difference. I was surprised that you got pretty much the same pattern solution. So it's something that next time around I'm sure will be explored a lot more heavily, and particularly M at age and so forth. But it wasn't the golden key here to the problem.
Okay, I'm it's interesting you said that when you get rid of the age 6-plus fish, the problem starts to go away, because I don't know how many people have seen many herring over 8 years old, not in my lifetime anyway. That goes back a ways, unfortunately. The natural mortality on people here might be something we want to study pretty soon. If the natural mortality has... The reason I'm asking about natural mortality is it seems like we have more predators than we had 15 years ago. We have, everything eats herring and there's more of everything else, as well as the fishing mortality. And yet, when you look back in that period, you're saying basically it doesn't make any difference.
It makes some difference, but not. You don't see a huge change in the pattern, or even in the retrospective.
Doug,
Gary, for this turn of the crank, you re-estimated BMSY, correct?
Yes.
Do you have any recollection of what the BMSY was from the previous peer-reviewed assessment?
I was going to say 630, but I'd have to look that up.
630.
Yeah, it increased. BMSY increased and FMSY decreased in this go round. I know that FMSY was like 0.3, went down to 0.27. I don't have the values on top of my head what the BMSY was, but unless somebody else has it.
But it was about the same, you're saying it was around 6?
Yeah, it was 6-something, yeah.
Okay.
Do you remember what it was?
No. Okay, thanks, Gary.
All right.
Is Loretta or Paul going to give the groundfish track summary? Loretta?
Good morning. I'm Loretta O'Brien from the National Marine Fisheries Service in Woods Hole, fisheries biologist in the Population Dynamics Branch. This morning, I'm going to present the track assessment results for Eastern Georgia's Bank Cod, and then Liz Brooks will present the haddock results, and Chris Legault will present the Georgia's Bank Yellowtail. So for Eastern Georgia's Bank, within the track, we periodically have benchmark assessments when we, after applying the updated assessment, if we see that we're having problems, say with retrospective pattern or whatever, we will have a benchmark assessment. So we did have a benchmark assessment this last year, a benchmark review. I forget the dates, but within the last year, we had a data review at one meeting. We're going all over the surveys and the landings. And the second meeting, we had a model meeting, which was in March of 2009, where we reviewed the different models for this management unit. And out of that benchmark assessment, we came out, the track decided to go forward with two models, and I'll get into that as I continue with the presentation. So if we look at the catch series, the catch in this figure are the histograms, the bars. You can see the catch was higher prior to 1994, and then catches decline sharply since 1994 due to restrictive management, but also because the stock or this management unit had declined. And in 2008, the total catch of U.S. and Canada combined was 1,782 metric tons. Of that, the U.S. took 253 metric tons, and of that, the U.S. took 231 metric tons for landings and discarded 22 metric tons. In the Canadian fishery, their total catch was about 1,500 metric tons. They landed about 1,400 metric tons and discarded about 140 metric tons. And now if we look at the fishing mortality in this, it's presented here for the two models. But first, just in general, you can see that the fishing mortality in both models declined sharply in 1994, as I said, due to restrictive management. But then increased somewhat and then declined a bit since 2000. And in 2008, it ranged between 0.25 and 0.17. So to explain a bit about these two models, the first model is what I call the 0.2 model. It's similar. It's the survey time series is split in 1994. And natural mortality is 0.2 for all ages throughout the time series. This model is essentially the same model that was applied to the Georgia's Bank cod assessment in the GARM, which is for the whole total stock, whereas this is a subset of the stock. So that's essentially the same model. The second model, mortality is 0.2 for all ages prior to 1994, but after 1994, a higher mortality is applied to fish six years old and older. And the reason we did this is looking at the survey, the abundance of ages 4 and 5 year old fish indicated that we should be catching larger fish. That larger fish should be landed. But when we look at the landings or look at the total catch, we weren't seeing these large fish. So we couldn't attribute the decline in their abundance in the older ages to fishing mortality. So it was subsumed into natural mortality. So having done that, we got better diagnostics from the model. We had less retrospective. That's the good news. The bad news is we have no explanation as to or no mechanism to support why there's an increase in mortality for the older ages. And because we couldn't clearly come up with a reason for that, we agreed by consensus within the track to go forward with the two models so that, you know, the uncertainty is right there on the table. So the plan is to go forward with both these models for the next 3 or 4 years, and I'll explain more in the next slide. If we look here at recruitment, is again the histograms here, you see that the 2003 year class, what happened to them? Okay, so the 2003 year class is the most recent large year class. It's still not above average. The last above average year class was back in 1990. So we've really had very poor recruitment in this management unit for the last 15 or 20 years. So the 2003 year class, it wasn't above average, but it certainly was better than we had seen in recent years. So as this year class goes through the fishery, we hope to follow it and see if it can shed some light on, what's going on with the older fish. If they end up showing up in the landings or in the discards in the next 3 or 4 years, as they move into the 8 and 9 age groups, then we may have an answer as, you know, that it's not natural mortality. Part of the problem is trying to figure out, you know, what's going on with the larger fish. Is these year classes in the recent time have been so poor, we it's very difficult to track the large fish. So we will continue with both models, as I said, for the next few years. So looking at the rest of this graph, the 2009 biomass it ranged between 8,700 metric tons and 12,000 metric tons for the two models. As I said, the 2000 year class is the highest since 1990, and it ranges between 4.4 and 5.8 million fish at age one. And you see that the 2002 and the 2004 year classes are the lowest on record here. The other aspect of this is you can see there's been this increase in biomass. This is due to the growth of the 2003 year class. And once that year class passes through the fishery, then we're going to be faced with the very, very weak 2004 year class, and then, you know, the year classes beyond that that are also not very strong. If we look at the stock recruit pattern for this management unit, we see that we have a better chance of good recruitment when the biomass is greater than 30,000 metric tons. And right now, the biomass remains below the 30,000 metric ton. It's at 8,700 or 12,000 in that range. If we look at projections in the 2010 TAC, there's two ways the TAC could be determined. One, if you were to base it on the 50% risk of not exceeding FREF in 2010, the TAC would range between 1,300 or 1,700 metric tons, depending on the model. If you were to base your TAC from the biomass perspective of a 50% risk that the biomass in 2011 would be less than what it was in 2010, the TAC would range between 1,800 from 900 to 1,800 metric tons. So in summary, F has been reduced in 2008. It was near FREF in one model, but it's the first time it's been that low. The 3-plus biomass has increased in 2008, as I said, due to the growth of the 2006 year class. and recent recruitment is generally poor. Biomass remains low since 1994. So if fishing were to remain near or below FREF, that would help maintain a higher biomass. So if there's any questions on cod.
Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, thank you, Loretta. Did the track include whether the split M0.2 or 0.5, or which one was preferable, which one should be favored in terms of best characterizing what's going on? Because we have two different alternatives to select from, but it doesn't seem that there's any specific advice from the track as to which one to pick. Am I wrong, or did the track actually suggest which one to use?
No, we didn't pick a favorite. We the 0.5 model does give you a better retrospective. I mean, it's a smaller. The pattern is, the magnitude is decreased. The pattern's similar, but just the magnitude is declined. We have no explanation. We have no mechanism to support why M would be, that high for the older ages. So we didn't want to go forward with just one model. I mean, this is why we went forward with two. So we didn't. I know it leaves. I mean, it just points to the uncertainty we have. We didn't want to choose one model over the other. It gives you better diagnostics, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's right. It's just, proceed with caution.
Okay, thank you. At the last paragraph on this, in the document, in the track status report, under special considerations, there's a bit of speculation there that's intriguing, but I don't quite understand what the track was getting at. Specifically, it says, mechanisms that explain changes in either survey catchability or natural mortality could not be established, and you mentioned that. Possible differences in vertical structure of cod aggregations in relation to changes in abundance could cause changes in catchability. Why did the track make mention of that? Was there some specific data available that led the track to that particular conclusion? What exactly does that mean?
There wasn't any particular data. The comment was made that perhaps and fishermen here may be able to support this or not, but at high abundance, someone mentioned that they thought that at higher abundances, the cod were distributed more vertically, whereas at low abundance, they would be more, or I guess in particular if the older ages were higher, in the distribution, vertical distribution, and at lower abundance, they would be closer to the bottom. And so there we have a different catch rate when the stock is at higher abundance versus low. That's where that comment came from, but we had nothing presented to us, so it was just conjecture, really.
Okay, thank you. Then the other statement in that paragraph mentions, I think it says that perhaps emigration had some impact on the conclusions of the assessment. Could you elaborate a little bit regarding that particular statement? It sounds like there might be some movement of codfish, the larger ones in particular, off the Georges Bank area to go elsewhere. I highlight this particular point because of my knowledge of the North Atlantic Oscillation, warming water temperatures throughout Georges Bank, lower productivity. So it's suggests that perhaps these larger fish are just moving off because the environment is not favorable, maybe something else. So what is meant by this reference to emigration?
Essentially that fish could be moving off the bank. The way this model set up, I mean, we were using, we couldn't directly account for that. This model doesn't incorporate movement rates on or off the bank. That would be another whole model. I mean, we discussed this at the data meeting, that the tagging results were presented, but we felt that we needed some more information. We needed that tagging data had to be worked up more, or additional tagging work done to get more definitive idea of what the movement rate might be. Unfortunately, that would only be for 1 year, so it's hard to then, you can't have it tagging every year. It's very expensive. So those are models that we'd have to pursue in the future. But in the short term, putting the M at 0.5 in the older ages would alias that immigration. But some of the tagging does show, movement off the bank. But unfortunately, in this model structure, we couldn't account for it directly. So that's why the term, it may be aliasing immigration, is in there.
David?
I think David pretty much asked my question, and that was the use of the tagging data. I mean, there's a substantial interaction between the Bay of Fundy and Eastern Georgia's Bank, and it would be my suggestion that would be a place to look at these age 6-plus fish haven't just died. They've simply left Georgia's Bank and gone somewhere else because it's a more favorable condition. And since you already said you can't do that at this time, that explains it. But I want to stress again, I'd like to have somebody look at that because I think that's the answer to the question.
Yeah, we discussed it quite a bit at the data review. Part of the problem is we do see this movement, but to quantify it, you can weight that movement in several different ways, and depending on if you use survey or fishing effort, or you get different movement rates. So that presents a problem. So there just more work needs to be done to come up with something that we all think is reasonable, and unfortunately, that wasn't even something we could do during the benchmark.
So just so I'm clear, so the model was telling us that we should have seen a certain amount of larger fish.
The model wasn't, the survey data showed that we had higher abundance, given the abundance of the age 4 and 5 year old fish, we would expected a certain amount of those fish, and we would expect them to move in to the fishery and be caught, but they weren't caught. And so since we couldn't attribute their mortality to fishing mortality, and they weren't there in the survey either, then we had to attribute, the idea was to attribute to natural mortality.
They weren't in the survey and they weren't in the catch?
Right.
So
and the idea of, I think they were in the survey, but not as much as we expected. So it could be they also aren't available in the survey gear, the larger fish.
So based on our previous survey work, we were expecting to see a certain proportion or amount of older fish in the survey and in the catch, and neither of them surfaced.
Right.
And that's why we decided to put that in the natural mortality classification for this year, because there was no other explanation.
Right. And what our hope is that if we, as I said, the 2006 year class is somewhat larger than what anything we've seen. So if we follow that through the fishery in the next 4 or 5 years, hopefully we'll be able to get an idea of what's going on with these older fish.
Okay. Jim?
Yeah, I've brought this up in the past, but having fished Georgia's for quite a few years, the problem, in my opinion, is the fishing industry can't go where the older fish are likely to be caught. Therefore, they can't show up in the catch. And I don't know if you guys have looked into that at all or not, but that's the opinion I have, is why we can't see these older fish in the catch. If you can't go where they are, you can't catch them.
Well, that was one argument that was put forth at the previous benchmark in 2002, but the data was looked at again, at least for the Canadian data in particular, because in January they weren't able to go on the bank when the larger fish were up on the bank. But they went back and looked at that data, and it didn't really present a problem there. Some years the large fish were there, and some years they weren't. It wasn't consistent, and it didn't seem to have an effect on the assessment, which is why we dropped, not that I want to get into it today, but why we dropped the previous benchmark, which was, we called around the corner. But it doesn't seem to be as much of a problem as we had thought previously.
So the difference between the model with an M of 0.2 and the model with an M of 0.5, the changes in adult biomass, you go from an assumption, this is for 2008, the assumption would be then that you had 7.4 million, the adult biomass is 7.4 million fish?
It's the biomass was 8,700 metric tons or 12,000, is that what you're asking?
Well, I'm in the status report.
Oh, okay.
1A, enclosure 1A, behind tab 3. So when you increase the natural mortality, adult biomass goes from 7.4 to 10.3. Your recruits go up by 20%. Your fishing mortality drops, and your exploitation rate drops when you increase your assumption on M. That's the impact or the effect.
Right.
Well, I hope those fish did swim to the Bay of Fundy or wherever people think they are. Because if they didn't and they actually were discarded or something, then we're proceeding with assumptions that can make things worse.
Right. Like I said, we have, this 0.5 was put into the model to provide better model diagnostics and to explain somewhat, you know, what we saw in the survey versus the catch. But we have, as I said, no good explanation for it. So, again, we're hoping that the 2006 year class will help clarify what the situation is.
Thanks. Anything else under COD? Okay. Is Liz going to do Haddock?
Good morning. I'll be reviewing the Haddock from the most recent track. You're going to see basically the same slides that Loretta just presented. The first one I'll go through is the catch and F. We have quite a time series of landings. Similar to cod, we saw drastic reductions in the early 90s. Catches have increased in recent years. In the black line going across there, that's our FREF, which is 0.26. The full fishing mortality has been more or less below that since the mid-90s. In the most recent year, 2008, the U.S. catch was just under 1,200 metric tons, and the Canadian was just under 15,000 metric tons. This is a plot of the surveys. The Canadian survey is in red. The two nymph surveys are in blue. That solid black line is the VPA fit through the 3-plus biomass. And you can see that shot up very sharply in 2005, and that reflects the 2003 year class attaining age 3. This is a plot of recruitment. Age 1 recruits on the left axis. They're represented by the solid blue bars. You can see here towards the end of the time series is the estimate for that 2003 year class. just under 300 million. Since then, the average recruitment has been about, I think, 11 million since 1990. The only substantial year class in that time period, well, at least since 2000, has been the 2005 year class, which is above average at about 25 million. More recently, the year classes have been just above or just below the average since 1990. Again, spawning biomass, the 3-plus is in the solid red line, and again, that shot up in 2005 once the 2003 year class attained age 3. Forecast for the stock, looking at neutral risk, a 50% probability that the fishing mortality will not exceed FRF of 0.26. That gives us a TAC of 28,000 metric tons in 2010. In summary, the U.S. catch has been well below the quota, and F has been below FRF. Total biomass is currently the highest on record. Catches into the future will largely be dependent on the 2003 year class, which is expected to contribute about 80% of the 2010 catch. And I'll be happy to answer questions.
Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, thank you, Liz. I think it's worthwhile to go over the outlook just to make sure we all understand where we're going, where we think we're going with Haddock. And in particular, I want to go the visual route and look at your figure 2. Figure 2 showing biomass at age 3 plus. Okay, so the red line, biomass at age 3 plus, we went up to close to 160,000. What year would that be?
The terminal year on that plot is 2008.
Okay, 2008, 160,000 metric tons. That's the age 3 plus biomass. In the outlook, just to make sure I've got this right, you indicate that because we're so dependent on the 2003 year class, and of course we've known that for a while, that biomass, I assume this is still age 3 plus, adult biomass is projected to be 94,700 metric tons at the beginning of 2011. That's 3 plus, correct?
Correct.
All right. So if we were to put that data point on that figure 2, we see a rather dramatic drop, as one would expect, from that peak. So did the TRAC provide any longer-term guidance regarding where we might be in a few years beyond 2011 in light of the recruitment that we've observed recently, below average, average? Are we going in a direction where, because of recruitment being below average, are we going in a direction where we will find ourselves with a plummeting spawning stock biomass, getting back down to maybe 40,000 metric tons? Obviously, I'm just throwing out a number, but
right.
What are the prospects for our, in the not-too-distant future, ending up with a dramatically different picture regarding availability of haddock to our fishery, which, of course, we can't land now anyways due to regulations, but that's another story.
So your main question is, what are the prospects for recruitment and basically the biomass levels? To get to the recruitment, in Figure 3 on the back, the main guidance has been that there's a chance of better recruitment, provided that spawning biomass is greater than 40,000 metric tons. So although it will decline because the 2003 year class is what's boosting it up right now, it will decline to just under 100,000 in 2011. That's still to the right of that cut point. Now, we've been to the right of that cut point for several years, but we haven't seen tremendous recruitment. So There's a greater chance of good recruitment above 40,000, but it's not a guarantee. That's the outlook on recruitment. You know, beyond that, biomass will go down because of natural and fishing mortality.
Right, but with the recruitment we have observed recently and with the anticipated recruitment because we're above that cut line, did the track make any... So the track did not go beyond 2011. I guess that's the bottom line, that we have to draw our own conclusions relative to beyond 2011 and hope that recruitment continues to be, in the optimistic side of the recruitment figure.
Right. No projections were made beyond 2011. As you know, the track process is conducted annually. We'll have better information on recruiting year classes each year. We can update that. The forecast for the most recent year class is very uncertain. CV is 70 or 80%. So it's kind of premature to speculate beyond that.
Okay. Well, I guess I'll just end with a statement of mild concern, moderate concern. I'm not sure how to categorize it yet, but we've dropped rather dramatically from 2008 down to where we think we're going to be in 2011, and that's doesn't bode well for the beyond 2011 unless indeed we get that good recruitment. So, thank you. Mm-hmm.
Okay, thanks, Liz. Who gets yellowtail? Chris.
Good morning. My name is Chris LaGault. I also work at Northeast Fisheries Science Center in the Population Dynamics Branch, and I'm here this morning to talk about Georgia's Bank yellowtail flounder. The first plot here shown, all the plots are taken from the track status report document, so if it's easier to see them in the document, you can look along there. The catches in 2008 were a total of 1,275, which is one of the lowest on record during a time series. And as you can see in the plot with the shading for Canada and the open bars for the U.S., if for the past few years, the catch has been almost entirely due to the U.S. The Canadian, and in fact in 2008, the U.S. caught 1,118 metric tons, and Canada caught 158, well below their quota allocation based on the sharing agreement. And this is because their directed fishery failed to catch their portion of the quota. Most of their catch was bycatch in their scallop fishery. On this plot in the solid blue line is the fishing mortality rate over time, starting in 1973 when our assessment begins. And for most of the time period, in fact, all years except for 2008, the F was well above the F reference line, the horizontal dashed line at 0.25. But in 2008, F dropped well below the F ref down to either 0.09 or 0.08 based on the two models that were put forward by the TRAC. So the reason there were two models considered is due to an increase in uncertainty in this assessment due to the data themselves. In 2008 and in 2009, the Canadian, or DFO, survey, both years had a single large toe that greatly influenced their survey for that year. In 2008, a single toe of 7.5 metric tons was captured, and in 2009, a single toe of 5.2 metric tons was captured. This had a very strong and obvious effect, as seen in this plot, where the DFO points are well above any that have been previously seen and, in fact, are well beyond anything that could be explained by most population dynamics. Now, because these points were driven by individual toes out of a set of hundreds of toes, the uncertainty of these estimates was also much greater than the previous years in the time series. And so the track decided to put forward two formulations, one of which included those points and broken out into their specific ages in each of the years, and that had very high values, and the other formulation dropped the 2008 and 2009 values from the Canadian survey series. The rest of the Canadian survey was maintained as a tuning index. Another source of uncertainty in this assessment is that the U.S. Spring 2009 survey, which would normally be available to help provide information in the tuning of the VPA, this year was conducted by our new vessel with its new net, and at the time of the assessment, calibration or conversion coefficients relating the new vessel and net to our old vessel and net were not available. And so we did not have any this index available to us at the time of the assessment. So the two formulations are very similar in pattern for the vast majority of the time series, and it's only in the last 2 years that there is any divergence, although the trends are still quite similar. Here you can see the adult biomass for ages 3+ increasing dramatically in 2008 and the start of 2009, reaching some of their highest values since 1973. And this happens for both the higher values, which include those DFO surveys, and the lower solid line, which exclude them. So the trends are very similar. It is the magnitude in the final years that differ between the two formulations. And both of the models indicate a very strong increase due to a strong 2005 year class. This can be seen in the next figure of recruitment and spawning stock biomass. The recruitment from the two models are shown in the bars. The shaded bars are the higher ones in the recent years, and these include the very high DFO survey values. The open bars are the formulation which exclude the DFO surveys in 2008 and 2009. In both cases, the 2005 year class is one of the strongest in the time series since 1973. The 2006 year class is either slightly above in the case of the including formulation or slightly below in the case of the excluding formulation, the average recruitment observed over this entire time series. Both models also agree that the 2007 year class is one of the weakest or the weakest in the time series. However, as with all these models, that most recent recruitment estimate is highly uncertain. The forecasts for the assessments, the two formulations, are shown graphically in the top plot as the risk of the fishing mortality rate exceeding the F reference of 0.25. And in the including case, that works out to about a 50% or risk neutral probability of 5,000 metric tons in 2010. And in the excluding case, I'm sorry, in the including 7,000, in the excluding 5,000 metric tons. However, in the U.S., we are governed by rebuilding requirements, and so when you combine the short amount of time available or remaining in the rebuilding plan, which is till 2014, along with that low estimate of recruitment in 2007, or the 2007 year class, rather, the excluding formulation came in with a very low catch in 2010, 450 metric tons. The including was still much lower than fishing at FREF and came in at 2,600. If the F rebuilds from the GARM assessment were just applied, that F was 0.107, then the catches would be 2,300 or 3,300 metric tons in 2010. So in summary, the catch was low in 2008 and will be low again in 2009 due to the 2,100 metric ton quota. The F has dropped. It's below the F reference in 2008 under both model formulations and well below the F ref. The biomass and spawning stock biomass are both up due to the strong 2005 year class. However, the spawning stock biomass is only approximately half of the U.S. rebuilding target of 43,200 metric tons. The 2007 year class is a concern currently. However, it is highly uncertain. We'll need another look at that cohort before we can really estimate well its strength. And this assessment, as I mentioned before, does have additional uncertainty. It has the Canadian survey has those large toes, which are highly influential. And we were missing the 2009 U.S. Spring Index. Now, next year, we will have the calibration coefficients available, so that information will be available to conduct the assessment with a full suite of indices. And as just shown previously, the catch advice depends on the rules. Which of those approaches is decided? Now, you'll be hearing later today a presentation about the TMGC, and I think the discussion about which rules apply is best conducted there. But if you have questions about how these calculations were done or anything else about the assessment, I'd be happy to answer your questions.
Dr. Pierce?
Yeah, thanks, Chris. Why, at the Trek, why were the Canadian and U.S. scientists unable to agree on the procedure to use regarding the large toes? It seems like the Canadians went in one direction and the U.S. scientists went in another direction, I think. But, again, you're a group of scientists, U.S. and Canadian scientists, very familiar with survey information and how to treat large toes. So why the discrepancy?
It was not a case of Canadians pushing one way and U.S. pushing the other way. That was not what happened. What happened was there was discussion about how best to model the uncertainty, the additional uncertainty inherent in these catches. And one thing that has been suggested by the track is to downweight the importance of those indices within the fitting. Now, we were unable to do that at the track except as a preliminary look at the assessment. And so what we did is we decided that including them with full and equal weight or dropping them, essentially assigning them zero weight, would bracket that uncertainty. And when we did a preliminary run, giving those indices approximately half the weight of the rest of the survey values, it came in right between those two. And so the decision was made to put forward these two runs as a means of bracketing the uncertainty. Neither run was favored as being correct. It's just that it should encompass where we think the true trend is.
Doug Rout.
Morning, Chris. I was curious if the Canadians provided the track any information on the age composition of those large toes. Were they primarily the 2005 year class and those large toes, or were they smaller fish or a mixture?
Yes, they did provide the age information. That was another source of uncertainty. They followed the standard sampling protocol with this large catch. When they did that in 2008, they did not encounter any fish that were ages 6 or older in terms of the ages. And so that index does not contain any 6-plus fish, which makes it difficult in terms of the fitting of that that index point, because you have ages 2 through 5 very high and age 6-plus at actually a very low value. In 2009, all the ages were encountered. There was a slight, there was an increased abundance of the 2003 year class, but no more than what would be expected based on its relative abundance that we see in the other surveys. So it was not a case of it only being the 2003 year class.
Very good.
Chris, we've had these discussions in the past about the change in catchability in Q.
Mm-hmm.
In yellowtail. How does that play out in this whole discussion of these toes?
Okay.
Can you maybe cover that a little bit?
Certainly. I apologize. I forgot to mention both of these formulations are the split series approach, so that the so-called major change model is how we used to label it. And so there is a change in the catchability, but these... when we include these very large survey values in the tuning, what happens is the model treats them as a large residual. It does increase towards them, but it can't go up as high as those values. And so all the ages in those 2 years have very strong residuals. The catchability coefficients estimated between the two runs are quite similar. Between the two, and they still show that large change from the 1994 and prior to 1995 and more recent years. There's still approximately a 3- to 5-fold increase in those survey catchabilities.
Okay, and the other question I had, because I don't know, is the Canadian survey a random stratified survey?
Yes, it's a stratified random survey. Just like ours, they just have a different stratification on Georges Bank than we do. But it's the same general type of survey.
Okay. The reason I ask is because it seems to me that yellowtail in the last, I don't know, since about 2000 have become much more fathom curve dependent. You know, it's part of this whole change in catchability issue.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's why I wanted to know if their strata are different or if there's a possibility that these big toes are not inconsistent with what fishermen would find when they find the fathom curve that the yellowtails are on. I mean, you could have in 30 fathoms a, you know, 5,000-pound toe. You could move to 28 fathoms and have a 200-pound toe. So it just indicates this idea that we have to explore this further and what is driving this change and why these fish are kind of behaving differently than they may have 20 or 30 years ago.
To respond to that, in fact, for next year's track assessment, there's a specific term of reference to look at environmental factors that may help explain some of these large toes, and depth changes are certainly going to be high on that list to consider.
Now, and it seems to me the fish have generally gone deeper in the last 10 years than they may have been, say, in the 80s. I mean, where the bigger toes were in maybe 15 fathoms, and now they're in 28, 30, like that, at least in the Gulf of Maine. The fish have mm-hmm. definitely changed their fathom curve preference within the type of bottom that they'll inhabit. I mean, it's still sandy bottom, but not,
yeah.
It's deeper.
Yeah, and both the U.S. and Canadian surveys do survey depths well beyond the range of yellowtail. So even if they are moving to deeper waters for yellowtail, they're still well within our survey depths.
Okay, well, thanks, Chris. We'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll start the SSC report.